Agronomists and economists for years have told farmers in developing countries that if they want to break out of poverty, they need to get more of their produce to market. Many potato farmers in the Peruvian Andes followed that advice, only to see the price for their potatoes collapse. Now they're being told to grow specialty crops for high-end niche markets. As part of World of Difference, a series on global cultural change, John Miller traveled to the highlands of Peru, where farmers in one community are trying to decide whether to take the plunge.
It's the Day of the Peasant, part national holiday, part Catholic feast day, part celebration of the winter solstice. Dance troupes compete for prizes in the plaza of Yapay, a dusty village in the central Andes. One of the dancers lugs a giant cross encrusted with 14 varieties of native potatoes. On a dirt road leading away from the plaza stands a double row of makeshift stalls. It's a biodiversity fair organized by a Peruvian nonprofit called Valle Verde. Farmers have come from all over the highlands to swap seeds and show off their crops: mashua, oca, oyuco, potato. Juan Ramos grows more than 600 different kinds of potatoes on his farm. He's put samples out on blue plastic plates, row after row on a tarp on the ground.
All of these potatoes is what we call native potatoes, which means that none of them come from plant breeding programs. They're all heritage potatoes.
Maria Scurra is a biologist with the International Potato Center in Lima. Scurra grew up in the Andes. Her parents were Jews who escaped Nazi Germany. She won a scholarship to Brandeis in the 1960s, earned a PhD from Cornell, then worked for years as a high-tech wheat breeder in Australia. But she says her real education started when she came back home.
When I went to study outside and had the great opportunity to go to the edges of where knowledge was, I thought that I could bring that back and that would really help people in the Andes who had no access to all that. What I learned is that the solutions aren't that simple and that you need to work more with the people who already have had many, many, many centuries of experience in their environments, and that these environments are complex and that they have complex solutions.
Maria Scurra rides on horseback up a steep trail out of the town of Quilcas. She's timed her visit for the harvest. The farmers live most of the year in town with roads and schools and electricity. The potato fields hug mountainsides a four-hour climb by foot or horse or donkey, about 13,000 feet above sea level. At a high point on the trail, the group stops to rest. A father leads his two-year-old son to a pile of stones. The boy drops a rock along with a handful of dried coca leaves. Farmer Marcelo Tisa says people carry amulets and make offerings to appease the spirit of the mountain.
When children come up for the first time, they protect themselves by carrying bread or grains of wheat or something made of steel.
Up in the fields, the harvest is beginning. It's a vast and barren landscape of gray stones and yellow grass. Bells ring in the distance, the clanging of llama trains carrying potatoes to town. Some of the farmers spend the two-week-long harvest in mud huts, but most pitch tents made of blue plastic sheeting.
Siembro de toda variedad, me gusta sembrar los colores.
Lucia Villa sits in her tent with the youngest of her three children. She wears a yellow sweater over a blue cotton dress. She grows 70 different kinds of potatoes.
It's for our own consumption. We hardly sell any. Yellow potato, papa guairo, we sell a little of those. But the red ones, the black ones, no one wants to buy them.
Not that she couldn't use the money.
Sometimes I have to go without eating to pay for school for my kids. But what am I going to do? I don't want them to be poor for the rest of their lives, but it's a clean life up here. The fields are clean, the potatoes are clean. We eat what we grow. We don't use any chemicals, so we are healthy.
Farming here hasn't changed much in hundreds of years. To loosen the soil, the farmers use a chaquitaclia, a foot plow made of sticks bound with llama leather. They pull every potato out of the ground by hand with the help of a tiny hoe called an ayachu. The tools are simple, but they're part of a complex social, biological, and spiritual system. The land is communally owned, parceled out each year by lottery. Before they plant, the farmers pay tribute to Pachamama, the Earth Mother. The incredible number of potato varieties doesn't just keep the diet interesting, it also keeps the crop from being wiped out by diseases or insects or frost. Skara hikes from field to field, trying to get a sense of what people need. Most of the problems have to do with recent changes. To try to boost production, the community decided to shorten the time between planting from 9 years to 5. This year they started farming on hillsides they always considered too steep to plant. She says science doesn't help much here.
If you see erosion, it's because people have laid off tradition and started rotating with other crops and not doing these long rotations. It's very long rotations with letting the grass back on and having these very long fallow periods.
In the middle of a field, a family has prepared a pachamanka, an earth oven, a hole in the ground filled with hot rocks that roast the potatoes to perfection. The potatoes are black and yellow, purple and blue, all sorts of shapes and sizes. They're organic, they're full of vitamins, and they're delicious. Some taste like chestnuts, others like biscuits with butter. Look at all this through an outsider's eyes, and it's hard not to see the commercial potential. In fact, that's something Skara wants to talk to the farmers about. At night, as the temperature drops to near freezing, about a dozen men and women gather in a drafty hut made of mud and straw. Candles provide the only light. The farmers sit on the floor, wrapped in ponchos, passing a plastic bag of coca leaves for chewing. Skara tells them she has news from Lima. A food shop in an upper-class suburb wants to buy some of their potatoes. They'd like a ton, or even just half a ton, enough to test the market. If the people are interested, and she's not telling them they should be, this might be an opening. Skara brought the same news last year. The farmers discussed it for weeks and finally decided not to sell. They couldn't figure out a way to divide the profits or the risks in case the experiment failed. This time an hour passes before the community president, Hugo Huaita, dares to restart the conversation.
We won't have enough to sell to a larger market. The other thing that we have to be conscious of is the possibility, how should I say it, of treachery. We don't want to get into a situation where we are competing against one another.
No, porque yo sé que siempre se tiene que sacar al mercado una cierta cantidad.
Marcelo Tisa stands up and says he'd like to give it a shot. He supports 14 family members on about 5 acres of land. He doesn't think it's smart to turn down a chance to make some money.
Si en este caso nos proponemos en eso, tendríamos que hacer unos acuerdos.
If we decide to go ahead with this, we will have to come up with some agreements in advance, like how many people will be selling their product and for how much. Then, if we have a certain amount, say 500 kilos to start, we can go ahead with the sale and see how things go.
But no one shares his optimism. The conversation goes back and forth, then moves on to other topics. By the end of the meeting, there's been no decision on whether to sell. The farmers of Kilkas are no strangers to the market. When they need cash, they come to town to sell a goat or a sheep, or they work for wages for a while, or send a relative to get a job in the city. But it's never enough, and it's easy to see why they might look to the native potatoes for help. Skara says people used to talk about Peru as a pauper sitting on a mine of gold. Now they say it's a pauper sitting on a mine of diversity.
But I can't seem to figure out how to change this diversity into benefiting the people, because you will notice that the people who actually maintain this diversity are the poorest farmers. And the only answer that Western society keeps giving them is, well, market it. But markets tend to do the opposite. They tend to want one thing all the same. I worry about pushing them into the market. I think it's a too simple a solution.
Even if the market were willing to take 8 or 10 or even 20 varieties instead of 1 or 2 or 3, she says it would demand even bigger changes of the growers, from when and where and what to plant to the way the community makes its decisions. Add the risk of falling prices, and playing it safe makes sense. Back in the highlands, the harvest continues. By a stone corral, a father and daughter prepare their llamas to take a load to town. Before they go, they entertain themselves with music. Sometimes it seems like the distance from here to the world of money and markets should be measured in centuries, not miles. But it's a lot closer than that, and the people here know it. There's no question that life in the mountains is hard. It's made these people strong, strong enough to keep doing what they've always done, but also, they hope, strong enough to change at their own pace, on their own terms. For NPR News, I'm John Miller.
John Miller's piece on the potato farmers in Peru is part of Worlds of Difference, a series on cultural global exchange, which is a project of Homelands Production. For pictures and information on Peru's peasant farmers, visit our website at npr.org.